All right, let's take a look at this little picture here. I guess I probably should have put this picture earlier. Here's our little platelets, and these are little fibrinogens floating around. And what do these little squares represent? Inactive GP2B3 inhibitors. Now, why do we call them GP? What does the GP stand for? What is a glycoprotein? Well, it can be used for that. What is a glycoprotein, chemically speaking? Well, it's a protein, so it's made up of amino acids connected through peptide bonds. And then there's a glyco on it, so there's a sugar stuck to it. So a glycoprotein is a sugar protein. So sugar protein 2B3A. I guess 2B is the inactive and 3A is the active. That's my guess, but I haven't actually looked at it that in depth. So here we have the inactive form. So it doesn't stick to anything at this point. Now, the platelets are going to become activated through all of these different mediators we talked about earlier, thromboxanes and ADP and whatever else. So the receptors are going to change, and now the fibrins are going to bind to them. So now not only are the platelets holding hands, but they're also holding on to ropes. Now, is it more secure to hold on to a rope, or is it more secure to buckle it to your harness? Buckle it to your harness. So you can think of the GP2B3A receptors as the harness. So it's going to strap itself in and connect to the fibrin. All right, so the very first thing that platelets do when you get a clot, what do they do first? All right, so we're going to join hands. But, you know, that's not very secure because they use lotion and they have very slippery hands, you know, and, I mean, it just might slip out. So what are we going to do next? Okay, well, next thing we're going to do is we're going to get some fibrin to help us. We're going to convert the fibrinogen into fibrin, and then we're going to take those little fibrin ropes and we're going to wrap it around our waist and tie it to a harness. What's the name for that little guy? Stop answering. You've already heard all these. So what's that little thing you use in mountain climbing that you like buckle yourself into? Anyone here ever go? Carabiner. Anyone here ever mountain climb or rock climb? The wall. Yeah. And some of those walls can be configured really tough. All right, so now we're going to talk about clotting problems. We can have one of two different problems in clotting. We can either not clot enough or we can clot too much when we shouldn't clot. So first thing we're going to talk about is not clotting enough, aka bleeding disorders. So the very first thing we're going to talk about is the general signs of bleeding disorders. The first one is ecchymosis. What is ecchymosis? Okay, describe that in colloquial terms. A bruise. It's what Stephanie had on her leg last week. Huge bruise because her boyfriend was beating her up. Actually, she's just... I'm not going to say. Now, in addition to ecchymosis, you can also have red dots. If those red dots are less than half a centimeter, we call them petechia. If they're bigger than half a centimeter, we call them purpura. These are different than bruises. Remember we showed you the pictures in the skin class? Okay. Then we can also have hemorrhages, various hemorrhages. One is nosebleed. Another is coughing up blood. Another is throwing up blood. Coffee ground emesis is when that blood has been digested and it looks like coffee grounds, like used coffee grounds. Very descriptive term there. Hematochezia is bright red bloody stools, and melena, black tarry stools. So people who are spontaneously bleeding may have any one or all of these. What's it called when you bleed in the eye? You have that big red eye. What do we call that? Subconjunctival bleed. Little girl down the hallway. Now, reasons for these, yeah, little girl, like, poltergeist? Yeah. Any of you play computer games around here? Video games? No? One? Yeah, you may not have noticed recently, but, you know, like every horror movie, and now beginning in computer games too, they all have these creepy little girls, you know? It's like there's just something evil about little girls who do bad things. I don't know. They're supposed to be like the picture of innocence, and then they like, That's what makes it so scary, I guess. I guess it's previewing their future when they become... Never mind. You just go too far, Dr. Heyman. All right. Disorders of platelets. If we don't have enough platelets, we call that thrombocytopenia. So thrombocytopenia is you just have too few platelets. And lower than what number? Lower than 150,000. On the other hand, we can have platelets that are around in enough numbers, but they just don't work right. So we have improperly formed platelets. Now, if a person is under 50,000 platelets, they begin to become at risk for spontaneously bleeding. And if they go under 20,000, they're at extremely high risk for spontaneously bleeding. So some causes are defective platelet production, disordered platelet distribution, and accelerated platelet destruction. On the other hand, you can have too many platelets. Then the patient will begin to clot inappropriately. That's going to be more than 400,000 or more than 350,000, depending on where you're looking. Primary hemorrhagic thrombocytosis. This is where you get a disorder where you have too much production of platelets. You can also have secondary thrombocytosis, where you don't destroy platelets when you should, so you get excess platelets floating around. So remember, the spleen has about a third of your body's platelets in it at any one time, just held in storage. If you get rid of the spleen, those begin to float around in the blood. You can get problems with platelets either by inheriting them from your parents or by taking certain drugs or by getting diseases that cause platelet destruction. So the number one cause of impaired platelet function is aspirin. Now, do we use that to our advantage? Yes, we use it when we want to prevent a person from clotting. And what would be the two major diseases that we would want to treat with aspirin? Heart attacks, myocardial infarctions, and strokes. Not what you said. All right. In addition to platelet problems, we can also have problems with clotting factors. Now, things that cause us to have not enough clotting factors. Vitamin K. Vitamin K is required to produce several of the clotting factors. You don't need to memorize which ones for our class. DIC is disseminated what?
Sorry?
What's DIC? Disseminated what? Intravascular coagulation. Now, should you just be clotting everywhere in your body for no apparent reason? No. And if you do, what will happen? You get clots everywhere in your blood. Just floating around blood, you start clotting. Is that what's supposed to happen? No. If that happens, what happens to the person? Okay, well, the first thing that happens is the blood itself becomes thickened, harder to pump, sludgy. Then so blood pressure goes up, makes it harder to pump. And then what happens, what you're saying earlier? Then you run out of clotting factors. When you run out of clotting factors, then what happens? Then you start to bleed. So we think that's actually why people who have hemorrhagic fevers like Ebola or Motaba in the outbreak begin bleeding from everywhere. It's because they first clot inappropriately, and then when they run out of clotting factors, then they start to bleed. So if you recall, in I think it was chapter 1, they treated Johnson with Machupo virus. They treated him with?
Electrolytes.
Well, they did treat him with electrolytes. But what else did they treat him with? Heparin. And the idea was you treat a hemorrhagic bleeding disorder with an anti-clotting drug. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? They're going to bleed to death because it's a hemorrhagic disease, and here you are giving them an anticoagulant, which is going to make them bleed even more. How's that helpful? Are you crazy? Do you want to be sued for malpractice? I mean, the next time you see someone having trouble breathing, just put a bag over their head. I mean, that's what it seems like to me. So why did it work? Because what? Because in this case, the bleeding is caused by too much clotting at first. So if we prevent that too much clotting, we can then prevent all of the bleeding later. I think I'm going to have to put that question on the final now that I've talked about it.
Okay,
you don't have to call me that.
Repeat.
All right, let's do it on the board. All right, so in hemorrhagic fever, the patient dies because they're bleeding to death spontaneously. Now, why did they bleed in the first place? What caused the bleeding? Okay, they ran out of clotting factors. All right, now, why did they run out of clotting factors? Because they had DIC. So now, if you skip to this last thing where you say they're bleeding to death, let's give them heparin. Is that crazy or is that smart? That's crazy. Again, you might as well just put a bag over the guy's head who's not breathing well. But if we take this heparin and we give it here, when the patient is in DIC, we can prevent this running out of clotting factors, which will prevent the bleeding. And that's what will be on your test. All right, we can also have liver disease. Why liver disease? Why would liver disease cause decreased blood clotting factors? I don't know. Well, what is a clotting factor? It's a what? It's a protein. What produces proteins? The liver. See, I taught you guys all this in the first week of class. It's all just basics applied to different things. It's the same like four concepts that we apply over and over and over and over again. So if you can remember that the liver produces proteins, it'll be a lot easier for you in the future. Thromboembolic disease. This is when you get a clot that then breaks off and causes even more clotting. And then hemophilia. What is hemophilia? Person who bleeds easily. It actually means lover of bleeding. Loves to bleed. Why does a person get hemophilia? Because they cut themselves a lot? Because they're clumsy? They have a fetish for sharp objects? Genetic. Okay, genetic what? Okay, but what is causing the problem? They choose the wrong mom and they bleed to death because they don't like their mom? They love their mom so much they want to give the mom their own blood? Oh, so the problem is that their genetics are missing the code to make certain clotting factors. And because they're missing those clotting factors, they bleed easily. So how do we treat that person? Give them clotting factors. And if your name happens to be Ryan White and you get the pooled clotting factors from the wrong person, you end up with HIV. But nowadays we test for that. All right, vitamin K deficiency. Vitamin K comes from Green leafy vegetables. It is also produced by your very own gut. Yes, inside your intestines at this very moment, you are simply crawling with bacteria. They are all over you. No, let me put it this way. There are more bacteria in your gut than there are cells in your entire body. You are infested with bacteria. Now, some of those bacteria are very helpful to us and will produce vitamin K. Now, when little babies are first born, have they eaten a meal yet? No. And were they in an anaerobic or an aerobic environment? Anaerobic. They were floating in water. So their guts do not have any of those wonderful little bacteria friends that you have. So little babies don't produce vitamin K themselves because they don't have those bacteria yet. So one of the first things we often do to little newborns is we give them an injection of vitamin K. So the causes for vitamin K deficiency: insufficient dietary intake, uncommon in most adults because our bacteria will produce it for us, absence of bile salts necessary to absorb it, intestinal malabsorption syndromes like celiac sprue, oral antibiotics that kill off those nice little helpful bacteria friends, and little babies that were just born who just don't have bacteria in their gut yet. Disseminated intravascular coagulation, we just talked about it a little bit, but let's talk about it a little bit more. It's common in these things. Notice that pregnancy, preeclampsia can lead to DIC, and septic shock. These are the two big ones that you need to think about that cause DIC. So it's widespread clotting. It's going to block up your blood vessels, make it harder to pump, cause pain, cause heart failure, and eventually will cause ischemia and death. But at the same time, you burn up your platelets and clotting factors, and then the person can bleed to death. Manifestations of DIC include bleeding, low platelet counts, low fibrinogen counts, increased bleeding times, and there's this early indicator, it's a D-dimer. Treatment. ABCs. What is A? Airway. What is B? Breathing. What is C? Circulation. Which is going to be the most cumbersome problem in this case? Circulation. Cardiopulmonary support. If they need it, you're going to breathe and pump for them. So CPR or heart-lung machine. Treat the underlying disorder. So, in the baby, you do emergency C-section. For a septic shock, you're going to give antibiotics. And give blood and fibrinogen, platelets, fresh frozen plasma as necessary. So, for the bleeding portion, though, what are the two things we're going to give to this patient, or three things we could give to this patient? What? For the bleeding. The patient is bleeding because they burned up all their platelets and clotting factors. What are the three things we can give them? Platelets. Blood. Clotting factors. And do we have something that contains both of those? Fresh frozen plasma. And in early DIC, you can give heparin. All right, that's all we're going to do for today.